When the rules of society are broken, things can get a little wild. This is Wild Society.
We have really big news to announce.
Hi, I'm Courtney.
Jordan is no longer on the podcast.
What?
And that was the new voice of the intro host, Linda Previch.
Mama Previch.
Love her.
She is the new host. Jordan is no longer with us. I'm Chad.
Bye, Jordan. I'm Courtney. Also, I was trying to talk before you because you screw it up every week.
I'm still here.
Oh. Jordan's still here.
And I'm Bethany. Welcome to Wild Society.
Mommy Previch. Previch was in town this past week.
She didn't bring the pigeons.
That was my dad's thing, not my mom.
She was married into it. We went to dinner with Linda J last night, and it was the best. We are officially obsessed with Mommy Previch.
Ah, she got a little drunk.
No, she didn't.
She had two sips, and she was like, I'm done.
I love your mom. She needs to come back.
Yeah, it was a blast. I don't watch 90 Day Fiancé.
Oh my God. I do now.
It was hilarious after dinner.
I even got into it.
I need to send you the video I took. I took a video of everyone after dinner was talking about 90 Day Fiancé outside of the restaurant we were eating at, just standing
you
on the curb.
You took a video? But
yeah.
Oh, I didn't even notice.
For like 20 minutes. And I'm just standing there. Jordan, too. And we're like, doo doo doo.
We have made fun of 90 Day Fiancé on this show before because Courtney was the one who watched it.
I'm obsessed.
My mom's obsessed. So I was like, fine, I'll be nice. And because we have Discovery Plus, my mom doesn't. So I was like, turned it on for her. And then I was instantly sucked in. I have a favorite. I have a least favorite. I have a favorite couple. Mm-hmm. Jovi's the hottest
one. It's juicy.
It is.
Well, who is, how do you pronounce his name? It's Elizabeth. Is it Andre?
Andre.
Andre.
Oh, Andre's hot.
He's fucking bossy and I like it. Andre. I followed him on Instagram.
You can't have girls.
He has an OnlyFans.
Oh, I'm not saying they all have a fucking OnlyFans.
He doesn't show nudity.
Oh.
It's just, which I did not join because the second I heard there was no nudity, I mean, why would
I? Sure, what's the point? What is he? Oh, he's like, here's my recipes.
Here's my recipes.
He's like I saw like a leaked picture and he's like laying there naked on the bed with like a pillow over him. I'm like, well, that's
but he
stupid.
Basically has that anyway
subtle.
In his workout.
Congratulations.
Pictures.
You get your pillows from At Home.
Congratulations.
At Home. At Home's like, oh, we were going to sponsor you until you said that.
I mean, if they want to sponsor us, that's fine. Go to... Yeah.
We'll delete it from the library that we said that.
Oh, man. I've been watching Love Island.
I want to watch that.
I am so sucked in. Like, talk about some good trash TV.
Talk about some hotties on TV.
Yeah, for real. Oh, they're all beautiful.
I don't think it could be better than Bachelor in Paradise.
No, it is.
Bethany wants to go on vacation so bad, she has to watch Love Island.
Yep.
To pretend
that's
she's
what it
on
is.
A tropical
that's
island.
What it is.
She just went to Mexico.
Yeah, but I couldn't get in the ocean.
Give us the rundown of Love Island, because I just know it's hot people.
So, starts out with, I don't remember the exact number, maybe like five girls, and they couple up just based on like initial... looks and then
like deep things like their favorite books.
So Chad and I would be together.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But then you never know when you're gonna have to do a recoupling.
Ooh,
so
what is there, like a horn that and you have to like musical chairs?
No.
Oh.
The hostess of the show like shows up and she's like, it's recoupling night, and it's always like dramatic surprise. And
Okay. Yeah.
And it goes back and forth between the guys get to pick who to recouple with. And then the next time it's the girls that get to pick. And there's always some people who go home. Like there's too many guys or too many
so
girls.
So it is like musical chairs.
I guess ish.
Wow.
Yeah. Is there like sand building contests?
They do like fun little games, but they don't like really win anything. It's more for like the game. So it's always.
They win love, Bethany.
Bury your partner on the beach.
It's always like sexual, like you have to kiss everyone or something like that.
Oh, what a terrible game.
Anyway, it's highly addictive and very entertaining.
I think we need to add that.
I'm invested,
Jordan.
For sure, all the way.
Because my mom started having us watch Searching for Sister Wife.
Yeah, Seeking Sister
it's
Wife.
It's not as good as Sister Wives. And yeah. It's certainly not as good as 90 Day Fiancé.
No, 90 Day is the best.
So I am officially now in.
And I watch all of the 90 Days. Like, I watch all the versions. All the Pillow Talks. I watch The Single Life.
There's so many versions.
Conscious Uncoupling.
Before Still
the
Together.
90 Day. Before the 90 Days.
Ethical Non-Monogamy.
90 Days the Other Way.
What's the other way? It's like...
They go to the other country from the U.S. They go to the other country.
Isn't that just part of 90 Days?
No, because 90 Days is usually here. They're from another country and they come to the U.S.
So it's like the prequel. Oh, no, it's like the post-quel.
The opposite.
Post-quel.
Sequel.
Like you post-quel. Would go to Russia instead yeah. of someone from
oh,
Russia
Oh, why is it Russia?
Here. I just threw out
why
a country.
Why is it Russia?
Why'd I don't know
go?
Why.
I mean, I would want to. Have you seen the Russians? They're hot, though.
They are hot.
Yeah. They're like, go to bed. And you're like, oh, yeah.
Oh, I'll go to bed.
Sure. Yeah, I will.
69, the sequel.
Anyways, we had so much fun with Mama Linda J.
Yep.
Dining and 90 Dayin.
That took her two takes.
Yeah. And the first one was great, too.
Yeah. We just told her to do the second just one a little more sexy. So that's what you heard. You heard the sexy
She's
take.
She's a star.
Sexy.
Shine bright, shine far. Be a star.
I literally sang that at dinner
where
last
you
night.
You are, be a star.
Oh, you're welcome. God. You're welcome. You're welcome.
No. This is now a musical podcast.
Dinner theta.
Before we get into our stories this week, head over to our website, wildsocietypodcast.com, to see pictures from today's episode. Also, be sure to hit follow or subscribe wherever you're listening.
I have a murder case this week, and it's pretty fucking crazy.
Uh-oh.
Didn't you have to take a Greyhound bus, like,
yes.
not very long ago?
Yeah, a couple of years ago. I used to take the train to Fort Worth all the time, but it got canceled because of the ice storm, so I had yeah. to legit take a Greyhound bus from Fort Worth to Oklahoma City, and it was packed. Every seat was full, and I had a huge cactus that I had bought to bring home.
Prickly.
And it was kind of sketchy. I'm not going to lie. No shade, but... I was.
Oh, yeah.
It was a late night Greyhound bus.
But you could use
situation.
The cactus as a weapon.
I definitely could have. Yes.
Did someone sit next to you? How
yes.
does that work?
Yes, oh. they did.
Ew.
Yeah.
Ew.
Well. Was it cloth seat?
Yes, it was
Ew.
Cloth seat.
Courtney goes,
2019. It was sketchy. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I ain't doing that.
This story might trigger something.
Uh-oh.
In you.
Oh, no.
And we'll definitely probably.
Oh, shit. Is this in Canada?
Yeah.
No, it was in Fort Worth.
I know this one. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
It was in Fort Worth.
No, it wasn't.
No, it wasn't. Okay, let's go. This is wild. This is definitely...
It's pretty crazy. This is like crazy. A wild story and a murder story.
Whew. So. Buckle up, Court.
And what's
Does a giraffe
crazy
eat
is...
someone?
Oh, yeah. That's what happens.
How did you know?
I want to find a story where a giraffe kills someone.
Don't. That's Letty's favorite animal.
She told me to find one about it.
She loves giraffes.
Oh, I love giraffes. So a lot of the times, like in our murder stories or, you know, serial killers, they have some kind of a motive or they have a history of mental illness. There's usually a reason why they're killing. This one really has no history of murder. He has no motive.
That's scarier to me.
It's a completely
oh, yeah,
random
sure.
situation.
Because it's totally unpredictable.
Yeah.
Or unforeseen.
How many of those people are walking around with us?
That guy right outside there, outside the window, he's one of them.
We talked about this last night. Like, think about
oh,
how
yeah,
many people you pass just every day that could be doing some really fucked up shit. You have no
oh,
idea.
Yeah. Or know? Someone that you know, they just snap.
Yeah,
one
that's,
day
yeah that's true.
This is a story of Vincent. Okay, I'm going to try to pronounce this name. Weiguang Lee. He goes by Vince, so I'm going to call him Vince in my story.
Okay.
Vince was born in Dandong, China, on April 30th, 1968. In 1992, he graduated from the Wuhan Institute of Technology with a bachelor's degree in computing.
Wuhan, like COVID?
Oh.
Wuhan?
Yeah.
Wuhan,
yeah.
Whoa.
Oh, interesting.
Interesting.
Whoa. I didn't make that connection. From 94 to 98, he worked in Beijing as a computer software engineer before he immigrated to Canada on June 11th, 2001.
Talk about the right time to be a computer engineer or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, for real.
That's
early
like
2000s.
Com.
Yeah.
Yeah. Craze.
Vince became a Canadian citizen on November 7th, 2006. The psychiatrist Stanley Yaren, I might be mispronouncing that, later examined Vince because of the case, which I'm about to tell you, said he had an incident with the Ontario Provincial Police and was hospitalized sometime in that time period.
Okay.
There's no details really about that, but there was just some incident with the Ontario Police. And that's really the only kind of criminal background he has going for him. He worked in Winnipeg, Canada, at random jobs at Grant Memorial Church for 6 months to support his wife, Anna. Pastor Tom Castor. Pastor Castor.
Oh, I love Pastor Castor. Great guy. He makes great blueberry pie.
He employed Vince, said, quote, he seemed happy to have a job and was committed to doing it well, despite a language barrier with other congregation members. I think he would occasionally feel frustrated with not being able to communicate or understand, but we have very patient staff members and he seemed to respond well. Pastor Castor also said Vince didn't show any signs of anger issues or any other trouble before he quit in the spring of 2005. After that, he worked as a forklift operator in Winnipeg while his wife worked as a waitress. Vince moved to Edmonton, Canada, in 2006, while his wife stayed alone in Winnipeg. She eventually also moved to Edmonton to join him. His jobs included customer service at Walmart, he worked at a fast food restaurant, and a newspaper delivery. His delivery boss, Vince Augert, described Vince as reliable, hardworking, and not showing any signs of trouble. 4 weeks before the case I'm about to tell you about, he was fired from Walmart following a, quote, disagreement with other employees. Shortly before the incident, Vince asked for time off from his delivery job to go to Winnipeg for a job interview. So now this is going to be 2 days leading up to the incident.
Okay.
On July 28th at 12:05 p.m. in Edmonton, Vince boarded a Greyhound bus heading for Winnipeg. Around 6 p.m. the next day, he got off the bus in Erickson, Manitoba, with at least 3 pieces of luggage and stayed the night on a bench next to a grocery store.
Hmm.
According to one witness, he was seen at 3 a.m. sitting upright with eyes wide open.
That's not creepy at all.
Yeah, at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
On the morning of July 30th, still at the bench, he sold his new laptop computer to a 15-year-old boy for $60.
Hmm.
Girl, know your worth.
The laptop, after what I'm about to tell you, was seized, actually, by the RCMP, which is the Royal Canadian Mounted Police.
The Mounties?
Mm-hmm.
I'm the Mountie. I always get my man.
What? No? I don't know.
No one else knows the Mounties?
I don't know that tune.
Happening. Okay.
Maybe our friends in Saskatchewan can sing it back
to us. Know that. They know the remix, the Justin the Bieber remix.
It was seized by the RCMP as evidence. So now the incident. On the same day, July 30th, 2008, Tim McLean, a carnival barker, which is a person who tries to attract people to entertainment events.
Just like getting people's attention to come to
like
the show.
Promoting it and mm-hmm. stuff.
He was returning home to Winnipeg after working at a fair in Edmonton. He departed Edmonton aboard Greyhound bus 1170 to Winnipeg via the Yellowhead Highway through Saskatchewan. He sat at the rear of the bus, one row ahead of the toilet. At 6:55 p.m., the bus departed from a stop in Erickson, Manitoba, with a new passenger, our guy Vince. Vince originally sat near the front of the bus, but moved to sit next to Tim McLean following a scheduled rest stop. Tim, according to witnesses, quote, barely acknowledged Vince. Then he fell asleep against the window pane, headphones covering his ears.
I hate when a stranger comes and sits beside you when there are other seats open.
That's what I was going to ask. I wonder if there's other seats open.
Well, he left wherever he was originally seating to go.
Ugh.
You know, why do people do that? I hate it when that happens. I'm such an introvert. I'm like, no, get away.
I would immediately be creeped out.
I know. Like, why? Like, why?
My guard would immediately
why
be
why are you sitting here
can
when
I,
you can sit?
Can I come
anyway?
By you, Beth?
No, absolutely not.
According to witnesses, Tim was sleeping with his headphones on when the man sitting next to him, Vince, suddenly produced a large knife and began stabbing him in the neck and chest.
Ugh.
After the attack began, the bus driver pulled to the side of the road and he, along with the other passengers, fled the vehicle. The driver and two other men made an attempt to rescue Tim, but they were chased away by Vince, who was slashing at them with a knife. So they were out of the bus. They were trying to kind of get back in the bus to like overtake him, and Vince was slashing at them behind the door like with the knife. Yeah. So they couldn't get in the bus. Vince ended up decapitating Tim and displayed his severed head to those standing outside the bus.
What?
So he held it up and was like this.
Wow.
Then he returned to Tim's body and began severing other parts of his body and started consuming the flesh.
No. Nope. I'm out.
Now, I have a clip of one of the witnesses, Garnet Canton. He's a 26-year-old seismic driller, and he sat one row ahead of Tim McLean. So he witnessed it firsthand. He was the first person to witness it.
I was just reading a book. All of a sudden, I heard a guy screaming. I turned around, and the guy sitting right next beside me was standing up and stabbing another guy with a Rambo knife, pretty much. It was a big survival knife like this in the throat, repeatedly. Told everybody to get off the bus. Everybody started to get off the bus. The guy still kept stabbing him. Everybody got off the bus. Me and a trucker that had stopped and the Greyhound driver ran up to the door to maybe see if the guy was still alive or we could help or something like that. And when we all got up, we seen that the guy was cutting off the guy's head. He was cutting off the guy's head there. And then he saw us. He came back to the front of the bus, told the driver to shut the door. He pressed the button and the door shut, but it didn't shut in time. And the guy was able to get his knife out and take a swipe at us. So we backed off the door. And I ran around the backside of the bus. The bus driver took off. And then we both returned to the front to see what had happened. And he hadn't gotten off the bus. The door was still open. We shut the bus door that time and shut it. It was at that point that he came, started walking to the front of the bus, and he had the head in his hand, and he just looked at us like this and dropped it on the ground, like, totally calm. The three of us had weapons from the trucker's truck there, and we just stayed outside while he tried to get out the door, telling him, stay put, stay there, don't try to come out. He tried to get the bus working, and the bus driver disabled the bus somehow in the back. I'm not sure how he did it. It was at that point, I think, that the police showed up and kicked us off, got us to the back, the end of the bus there.
I like how different Canadians are. He's like, and then the man behind me cut his head off and he was walking around with the head.
He's
and America
would have been
like, yeah, he decapitated him and then he was running around and I was like, oh shit.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Yeah, Canadians are so calm and so gentlemanly and
gentlemanly.
Yeah.
Just describe.
Can you just imagine?
Oh, like, God.
Oh, hell no.
How scary to, obviously, so scary to be Tim. But even the guy that we just listened to, like, sitting right in front, I would be trying to run off that bus, afraid that a knife was coming at my back, you know? Like, oh, so scary.
And the bus driver, like, go him for disabling the bus so that you couldn't get away.
Good thinking. Yeah, quick thinking.
Jinx.
Jinx, Bethany. You owe me a Coke.
At 8:30 p.m., the RCMP, again, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, in Portage La Prairie received a report of a stabbing on a Greyhound bus west of the city. They arrived to find Vince still aboard the bus, being prevented from escaping by another passenger. The bus driver and a truck driver who were wielding a crowbar and a hammer as weapons. Mm. The other passengers were sitting at the roadside, some of them crying and some vomiting.
That would be me.
Yeah,
for sure.
I would have been passed out. I would have been just done.
Like, I'd have been just running down the road. I don't need to.
I wouldn't want to be near the bus.
Yeah.
My body would be completely empty of nutrients. I would have vomited every nutrient out of my body.
I can't imagine standing there seeing him holding that head. Like, no big deal.
You just
I would think I was
it.
Like, I don't know what I think. I was stroking out or something.
I'm kind of shocked that they kind of stayed by the bus.
I wonder if it was some odd curiosity about wanting to see what happened.
Well, also, like, the numbers are in your favor. Yeah. When you're outside
That's
of the bus,
true.
You have more space than when you're crammed into a bus.
Maybe
but,
they didn't want him to get away, so they all thought if they stood there.
Also,
the way that the guy describes it as a Rambo knife is really...
That's scary.
Visually tells the story.
And a big knife.
Yeah, big knife.
Because Vince tried to escape by driving the bus away at one point, the driver had engaged the emergency immobilizer system, rendering the vehicle inoperable. By 9 p.m., police were in a standoff with Vince and had summoned special negotiators and a heavily armed tactical unit. Vince paced the length of the bus and continued to defile his corpse.
Oh, gosh.
Police officers then observed Vince eating parts of the body.
Oh, gosh.
Meanwhile, the stranded passengers were transported from the scene to be interviewed at the Brandon RCMP detachment. RCMP officers reportedly heard Vince say, "I have to stay on the bus forever."
Hmm.
On July 31st, 2008, at 1:30 a.m., Vince attempted to escape from the bus by breaking through a window. He was shot with a taser twice, handcuffed, and placed in the back of the police car. Parts of the victim's body were placed in plastic bags and were retrieved from the bus, while his ear, nose, and tongue were found in Vince's pockets. The victim's eyes and a part of his heart were never recovered.
Oh, no.
And are presumed to have been eaten by Vince.
Oh. Wow.
Man, we are doing some, like, some cannibal episodes.
I know. I was just thinking that.
How many are you going to do in a row?
I know. This is my last one for a while.
Yeah, we need to take a break.
I need another demon.
No.
I feel bad for his family.
Oh, my gosh.
To get a family member back like that, it's got to be horrible.
Later that morning at 10 a.m., Greyhound representatives took the other passengers to a local store to replace their clothes since they remained on the bus. They arrived in Winnipeg at 3:30 p.m. that day to be reunited with family members and friends. Vince's trial started on March 3, 2009, with Vince pleading not criminally responsible on account of a mental disorder, which meant he accepted that the offense occurred but claimed that he was unable to perform the necessary mental element of right or wrong. The psychiatrist said that Vince performed the attack because he was hearing voices he believed were from God, telling him to destroy the demon sitting beside him, or he would be killed himself. The presiding judge, John Scurfield, accepted the diagnosis and ruled that Vince was not criminally responsible for the killing. He was then handed over to the Selkirk Mental Health Center.
Okay, but why did he have such a big knife?
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Are you a prosecuting attorney, Courtney?
Yes. Like, why were you carrying such a big knife on? Because, like, if it was in your luggage bag, that's one thing. Mm-hmm. You had it on you.
That's another.
Unless his defense is like he was hearing voices, so he was traveling to protect himself. Yeah,
maybe.
I don't know.
So, like, on June 3rd, 2010, Vince was granted supervised outdoor walks with his mental health facility.
No.
As voted by the Provincial Review Board.
No.
Bad decision.
On May 30th, 2011, CBC reported that Vince was responding well to his psychiatric treatment and that his doctor had recommended that he receive more freedoms, phased in over several months. On May 17th, 2012, it was reported that Vince had been granted temporary passes that would allow him out of the Selkirk Mental Health Center for visits to the town of Selkirk, supervised by a nurse and a peace officer. In an interview, he spoke for the first time, saying that he began hearing, quote, the voice of God in 2004, and that he wanted to save the people from an alien attack.
Yeah, he needs to just stay where he is. If he's fine and he's happy, we're just going to leave you right there.
Just keep listening.
On February 20th,
what? Do aliens come and he saves us? Oh.
No.
And he saves us.
No aliens. On February 27th, 2014, CBC reported that on March 6th, Vince would be allowed to have unsupervised visits to Selkirk, starting at 30 minutes and expanding to full day trips.
Unsupervised?
Unsupervised.
What does he need to do? Like, I'm sure his meals are taken care of, his clothing. Like, what does he need to go out and do? What are you doing, bro? Like,
he needs to go and take walks to the Best Buy and buy the latest albums.
Not appropriate.
I just want to know if he planned on taking any bus rides.
Oh, no.
The one thing that's going right now is that they're announcing it. Because sometimes they don't. I've read cases where, like, they let prisoners go shopping and stuff in the malls and they don't tell anybody.
Also, that was on this podcast again. In Germany, the guy was wearing a disguise. Remember? God, Courtney.
You never
you do
remember.
That every
Bro,
time.
When we record, it leaves.
Oh my God. You do that every time.
So, like, I heard this thing. And we're like, yeah, we told you.
She was like, remember that? I read about this case in Germany where the guy, he was a cannibal, but they, like, gave him a disguise.
Go back to episode whatever.
My God. I think that was actually me that said that.
No, I was the one who did the story.
Are you sure?
In Germany. Oh my God. You do this every time.
Regardless.
Regardless.
They're telling the people. So yeah. Go them, but bad them.
Sure.
Go them, bad them.
Since 2013, he has been allowed to have supervised visits to Lockport, Winnipeg, and nearby beaches.
Bro, don't need to go to the beach.
So now at this point, he's allowed to have unsupervised visits to Selkirk. On February 27, 2015, CBC News reported that Vince was given unsupervised day passes to visit Winnipeg, so long as he carried a functioning cellular telephone while using them.
What about Saskatchewan? Does he go there to see the whales?
And the pike.
The pike. Whales.
On May 8, 2015, CTV News reported that Vince would be granted passes to group homes in the community. In February 2016, it was reported that Vince had legally changed his name to Will Baker.
No.
And was seeking to leave his group home to live independently. He won the right to live alone on February 26th upon the recommendation of the Criminal Code Review Board.
They need to lose their jobs. They need to start over with the whole board.
Start over.
Bill Baker is going to cause some trouble.
Bill Baker.
And on February 10th, 2017, the Manitoba Criminal Code Review Board ordered that Vince be discharged. He was granted an absolute discharge.
Wait.
There would be no legal obligations or restrictions pertaining to his independent living. He is a completely free man.
Yeah, Manitoba, whatever review board needs to know.
The Manitoba?
Manitoba.
Manitoba.
People need to go.
Now,
peace
how do
be
you
with
feel
you,
about
find
this?
Some new ones.
Wait, so he didn't even get a decade?
Mm-mm.
Are you for murder? Chopping off someone's head.
Eating them.
He didn't even get a decade.
Mm-mm.
Holy crap. Listen, Manitoba. You got a lot to answer for.
Manitoba.
I know I said Courtney.
I mean, I don't care if you're criminally insane, but you still killed a person.
Yeah, there's consequences.
So you still did something illegal. Wow. And wrong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Preach, boy, preach.
On a kind of a sad note, on July 17th, 2014, it was reported that one of the first officers on the scene, Corporal Ken Baker, had committed suicide.
Oh, wow.
The family stated in his obituary that he suffered from post-traumatic stress.
Wow.
So really, he had killed two people then. Think about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This case is exactly why I was scared to ride that Greyhound bus that I was telling y'all about earlier.
You hear this story and you're like, I'm never fucking getting on a bus ever again.
I was forced onto it, and the whole time I was like, I hope no one cuts my head off.
That was the story of Vince Lee.
Wait, so what is Bill doing?
He's out.
He's just out living his life.
Completely free.
Wait, he's out?
He's like a completely free citizen. He changed his name to Will Baker, and he's...
Y'all watch out for Will Baker.
Wait, so technically, he hasn't done anything.
Yet.
Well, I'm just saying, maybe they were right.
Bethany's right. He did do something.
No, I'm saying we were like mad at the board, but technically maybe they're
right. How do we know?
There has been lots of petitions.
Yeah.
I mean, as one can imagine.
I mean, honestly, I'd be pissed if they didn't disclose like exactly where he was and like.
Right. Yeah.
To our Canadian listeners. Let us know what you think about this. Does it make you nervous that he's a free man, or are you cool with it?
To our Canadian listeners, don't trust anybody.
Yeah, for real, though.
Can I put in a request that you tone it down the next time?
If I ever have to ride on a Greyhound bus, I'm putting like a fucking traffic cone in the seat next to me.
Traffic cone.
So everyone knows cotton candy is basically a staple when you go to the carnival.
Ugh, love it.
Me too.
It's pretty much the classic carnival.
Definitely.
Candy you can get. Whoever gets it, you end up like picking pieces off of it.
Oh, yes. I'll stab someone if they try that. I will stab you. I'll stab you twice.
Don't take Chad to the fair. Carnival.
Oh, really? You don't want
anywhere.
To do
that. No, you don't. That's a good idea.
Our friends Lisa and Anthony have actually come up with a fantastic idea of making gourmet cotton candy. And the flavors are out of this world.
So yummy.
They're so good. Flavors ranging from spicy to sour, to sweet. They cover like everything. We're talking flavors like Belgian waffle, cherry bomb, which has like a spicy kick. It will like knock your socks off.
It is very spicy.
So good. and Sucker Punch for all you sour candy lovers out there.
Ooh. Okay, but the Belgian waffle.
I know. I agree with you, Courtney.
Literally, you can taste the butter and the syrup and the waffle. Like, it's so interesting. I've never had anything like it ever.
We've had it in the house. And the one thing I noticed, besides it's amazing, if you just keep the lid off a little bit, it actually doubles as a candle in your whole house. Will smell amazing.
Dual purpose.
The best part about this is that they're local out of Norman, and who doesn't love to shop local?
Yeah.
They also can ship anywhere in the U.S. So go to their website, www.carnivalsugar.com, and their Instagram, Carnival Sugar. When you place an order, make sure to type Wild Society in the notes, and you'll receive a free sample.
Ooh.
Yeah, and the only thing better than cotton candy is free cotton candy.
Yeah, right?
Absolutely.
Free, delicious.
What's your favorite? Candy. So your favorite is?
Oh, hands down, Belgian waffle.
I would say Belgian waffle, but I was pleasantly surprised in the sour because mm-hmm. I'm not the biggest sour fan. But I really like that one, so it's a close second for me.
But I love all the sour things. The spicy one is so cool because it has like the Pop Rocks going in there.
Yes, I know. I appreciated that.
It's so unexpected.
It's a very interesting event happening in your mouth.
I am a Cherry Bomb fan because I love spicy.
CarnivalSugar.com.
Okay, sorry y'all, but today my story, my wild story is a little bit of a downer.
Well, because mine was such an upper.
True. It's a downer. But it's also wild. Okay. On February 8th, 1931, James Byron Dean was born in Marion, Indiana.
Ooh la la, James Dean.
Oh my God, James Dean.
Apparently he went down, so.
What?
What?
What did you gay just... rumor.
Oh, yeah. There is rumors that he was gay.
My kind of story.
I've read the books.
Oh, the book
all that
was
gay
better.
History in Hollywood is so fascinating.
No, I literally read two books about it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, keep going.
Interesting.
Oh, good.
Yeah, good.
Good for you.
Yeah, thanks.
Reading's fundamental.
Thanks.
You guys get all the hot ones. I mean, my husband's hot, but like, can y'all stop?
The otherworldly hot ones.
Yes.
By the way, I like how you have all these just hot pictures of him for no reason.
Heck, yes, I did.
In your notes.
Y'all go to our website. I'm going to make Bethany post. Yeah. All of the beautiful pictures of James Dean. Love him.
Look at those cheekbones.
Ugh. I know. And
he's
the
just,
hair.
He's beautiful.
Your boy's got a jawline for days.
Okay, back to the story. His father left a lifestyle of farming to become a dentist and moved the family to Santa Monica, California. Dean was an only child, his mother tragically dying from cancer when he was just 9 years old. After his mother's death, he was sent to live on the farm with his aunt and uncle. And then he returned to Santa Monica after graduating high school. Dean first attended Santa Monica Junior College, then transferred to the University of California in Los Angeles. He soon dropped out and became an aspiring actor. His first TV appearance was in a Pepsi ad. Dean then moved to New York City in 1951 and studied under Lee Strasberg at the Actors Studio. He landed roles in Danger, Omnius, and General Electric Theater, and appeared on Broadway in The Immoralist and See the Jaguar. Dean was cast in the 1954 film East of Eden, in which he was nominated for Best Actor in a leading role at the 1955 Academy Awards.
Which is the Oscars, Bethany? I know you don't know that, but that's the Oscars.
I don't know anything about films, so tell me all the things.
This is actually not my forte, but...
I know, this is my kind of a wild story.
I know,
story.
She's mad that I took question. This.
Did you really know that was the Oscars?
No.
Oh my gosh.
Really? Academy Awards? No. Courtney.
I love that.
Do you know what the Emmys are?
Y'all, I'm a down-home country girl from Oklahoma. I don't watch okay. that stuff.
So am I.
People know what the Oscars are in Oklahoma.
I just watched 90
Day
Fiancé.
You went to Phantom in Los Angeles.
Yeah, you went to freaking fashion school.
Do you know we
LA.
Have we have the biggest
I
now
did, you're right.
soundstage in the Midwest, downtown.
I believe that, yeah. Prairie Surf.
Yeah. We're like the movie capital of the Midwest
now. We're like
now,
the
up okay?
and coming
We're not
place.
In the Midwest. We're in the South.
We are in
the
South.
That's what they're billing it as.
Well, we're technically in the South. We
Listen!
Discovered that. Okay. Let's keep going.
Okay. Didn't even get to finish my freaking little
yeah,
sentence.
Just go back.
Do you remember when Jordan was telling a story and you took 30 minutes to tell a story in the middle? Well, there you go.
Payback.
Pay pigs.
Pay pigs.
I wish I had some pay pigs.
Mistress Courtney.
I'm going to start taking pictures of my feet.
No piggies.
Dean was cast in the 1954 film East of Eden, in which he was nominated for Best Actor in a leading role at the 1955 Academy Awards. Although this was just one of three films he was in, it was the only one released before his tragic death. James Dean had always been into motorcycles and fast cars, like most men. Are you guys into
them? I'm not into motorcycles, but I like cars.
I like fast cars.
Yeah.
That's just like a man thing.
You're the one who has the best.
It can be a girl thing. You have a vintage Mustang.
Yeah, but I don't like to go fast in it. I just like that it's pretty.
How come all of a sudden you have a northern accent at weird times?
Not because I hung out with Linda J.
Linda J is rubbing off.
But even before, fast cars.
Because we hang out with you.
But it's funny you say that. You have the best looking classic car of anyone I know in person.
Speaking of, next year Pride Parade, your car, Wild Society.
Yes.
I wish it was a convertible. Maybe we can convince my dad to cut the top off.
Oh.
We'll hang out the...
Okay. And we could just sit in it.
Let's hang out the windows.
We can't hang out the
windows. No, we need a cover in case there's an assassin for us.
Oh, God. Please don't assassinate us. But come see us at the Pride Parade 2022. Okay, you see. He had his first motorcycle at age 15 and had many cars and motorcycles in his short life. Dean liked to race his cars. His first race was the March of 1955 Palm Springs Road Races, where he finished first place in the novice class and second overall in
novice.
I don't know how to say words.
Novice. Beelzebub is such a novice.
What does that even mean?
A novice is like beginner.
A novice.
I mean, novice. See, you're rubbing off on me now.
It means you're not a professional.
Yeah.
Novice. Damn it.
Novice?
Novice.
Y'all love me.
Yeah, we do.
I'm like the best basic bitch blonde brunette ever. Yeah. Like, you're not blonde.
She's like James Deanne.
Deanne. No, but there's probably a lot of other words in here I'm going to fuck up, so just be prepared. In April of 55, he raced in Bakersfield, getting first in his class and third overall. He had driven his new 1955 Porsche 356 Super Speedster, which he bought from Johnny von Neumann at Competition Motors in Hollywood. Dean had began filming for the movie Giant and had been barred from racing from Warner Brothers.
I love that movie.
Me too. That was filmed in Marfa.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Marfa Washington? She died a while ago, though.
Marfa Washington.
Okay. Marfa, Texas.
Do you know where that is?
Yeah, it's in Texas.
Oh. There's a lot of things in
Texas.
It's
in Marfa.
It's in Marfa.
So they obviously barred him because they didn't want him to get hurt while they were filming. They kind of needed him. But as filming came to a close, Dean decided he wanted a different car and wanted to pick back up on racing. On September 19th, 1955, he went back to Competition Motors and traded in his Speedster for a 1955 Porsche 550 Spyder. After buying the Spyder, he immediately entered the Salinas road races that were to take place the next week. But Dean couldn't just race an ordinary car. He needed it to be personalized. He took the car to George Barris, known as the King of Customs, to have it customized. Dean chose tartan red seats and wanted the number 130 painted on the hood, doors, and trunk. The car had also been nicknamed the Little Bastard, so he had Little Bastard hand-lettered on the car as well. There are two different rumors as to how the car got the name. One rumor is that Jack Warner, head of Warner Brothers, had called Dean a little bastard when he had refused to leave his temporary East of Eden film trailer on the studio set. So when they were done filming, they're like, you need to get out of here. And he's like, I don't want to stay here.
That's a true story.
Is it?
Yeah.
There's another rumor too.
I mean, I don't know that he called him little bastard but yeah. I know that he stayed in his trailer.
The other rumor is that Bill Hickman, a friend of Dean's and a Warner Brothers stunt driver, used to call him little bastard. And in turn, Dean would call Hickman big bastard. So either way, Dean just kind of had a little nickname of Little Bastard. Just 13 days before the Salinas race, Dean did an interview with Gig Young for an episode of Warner Brothers Presents. In this particular episode, they were discouraging speeding. Dean was supposed to say, quote, "The life you save may be your own," according to the script. But instead he said, quote, "Take it easy driving. The life you might save might be mine." On September 30th, 1955, James Dean, along with Porsche mechanic Rolf Wutherich, Bill Hickman, and photographer Stan H. Roth, began to head to Salinas for the race. The original plan was that they would tow the spider on a trailer pulled by Dean's station wagon, but Wutherick suggested...
Wait, James Dean drove a station wagon?
To tow his car.
Just to tow.
But that was like his car that he owned? He like drove.
He just had another one.
Station wagons were probably new back then. No, that's
not... He drove his sports cars around town.
Okay.
But he had a station wagon to tow the sports cars to the races.
I kind of like that. He was like, here's my station wagon. He rolls up to the shoot.
What up, guys?
He also had a Ford Focus named
Betsy.
Back
then, it was probably like having a...
Well, he was very young. Denali. He only had one movie out.
You have to remember,
he wasn't like, huge yet.
Yeah, he wasn't that. Super famous.
I'm listening to the story.
He became super well-known and famous after he died. So, yes, he had money and he was doing movies, but he wasn't like...
He was like the up-and-comer.
Yes.
Listen, you don't even know the Oscars or the Academy Awards. You don't need to woman-splain this to me.
Listen. So anyways, they were supposed to tow it, but Wutherick suggested that Dean drive the spider to put miles on it and to like get used to the car before he raced it.
Which sounds smart.
Yeah. Wutherick sat in the passenger seat of the spider while Hickman and Roth followed them in the station wagon pulling the trailer. The drive to Salinas was a little over 300 miles.
Ooh.
So the caravan made a few stops along the way. So that's kind of why I'm like, you could have maybe driven it a little bit, but then tow it the rest of the way. I don't know, like get it warmed up and then tow it. Like that's a long ways. One stop they made was at a mobile gas station in Sherman Oaks. A photo taken of Dean at the gas station is reportedly the last picture taken of him alive.
And there's the station wagon behind it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I have that photo. It'll be on our website.
You can still go to that gas station today. Wow.
The caravan continued on Route 466 towards Salinas when Dean decided he wanted to pick up the pace. At around 3:30 that afternoon, near Bakersfield, California, Highway Patrolman O.V. Hunter pulled over the spider and wrote Dean a ticket for driving 65 in a 55.
Oh, what an ass.
Which...
This was 1955 or something, right?
Yes, 1955. Yeah.
That'd be all of us pulled over. Like we,
immediately.
You drive 10 miles, you get another ticket. You're like, come on, man.
Which I kind of wonder if he was going faster.
Yeah, they gave him a break.
Yes.
Maybe. That's a good point.
But the ticket didn't slow him down, obviously. He still wanted to drive fast. But his friends in his station wagon, they also got a ticket because they were also going 65 in a 55. But I guess... The law at the time was if you're pulling a trailer, you can't go more than 45. So they got a ticket for going 20 over.
That made that cop's day. He like made his quota. He went home for the day. He was done.
Yes.
Yeah. Cause this is kind of like rural California. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot out there.
Like even today?
Yeah.
Wow.
At about 5:15, the caravan was driving towards Chalamet, California. Dean was going approximately 85 miles per hour when a 1950 Ford Tudor coupe, driven by 23-year-old Cal Poly student Donald Turnipseed, made a left turn in front of the spider. The cars crashed head-on, sending the Ford sledding 39 feet down the road. The Porsche spider containing James Dean and Rolf Wutherick reportedly flipped 2 to 3 times, was completely crushed before landing on its wheels next to the road. Dean was trapped inside while Wutherick had been ejected from the vehicle. Dean suffered massive injuries, including a crushed foot from being smashed between the clutch and brake pedal, a broken neck, fractured upper and lower jaw, both broken arms, and massive internal injuries. Wutherick suffered from a fractured hip, fractured jaw, and body lacerations. And Turnipseed only had minor injuries. Dean, who was unconscious, and Wutherick were transported by ambulance to the Paso Robles War Memorial Hospital, which was 28 miles away, which is a long ambulance
That's far.
Ride. Yeah. James Dean was pronounced dead upon arrival at 6:20 p.m. So although James Dean was an up-and-coming actor, the world was obviously crushed to hear of his passing. George Stevens, one of Dean's producers and directors, said that his death was, quote, a great tragedy. He had extraordinary talent. Elizabeth Taylor, Dean's co-star in Giant, was shocked when she heard the news saying, quote, I can't believe it. I'm just stunned. So the world was heartbroken.
I'm still heartbroken.
Yeah.
It wasn't his fault.
It wasn't his fault. The car turned out in front of him and he was going too fast. He didn't have time to react.
Yeah.
Well.
No, I mean, it was the turnip seed's fault. Like, he shouldn't have pulled out.
But he wasn't going 85.
It's a highway. No, it's a fucking highway. I mean, I know he's speeding, but it's a highway that you're supposed to, like, yield on. And turnip seed didn't yield. He just went.
Did he? Yeah. Is it possible he didn't see the car coming since he was going 30
it's
miles
possible.
Over the speed
possible.
Limit?
Possible.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Hollywood Reporter wrote an article based on the 1977 interview with Alec Guinness on BBC's Parkinson talk show. Alec explained that on the evening of September 23rd, 1955, he was going out to dinner with a friend. They were trying to get into a restaurant in Hollywood, but were turned away because it was too full. They were walking away when he heard feet running towards him, and it was James Dean. Dean said, "I was in that restaurant and you couldn't get a table. My name is James Dean. Would you please come in and join me?" Dean clearly knew who Guinness was. He had film credits and was nominated for an Oscar. Guinness and his friend agreed to sit with Dean, but on the way back to the restaurant, Dean wanted to show off his new car. Guinness recalls, quote, "There in the courtyard of this little restaurant was this little silver thing, very smart, all done up in cellophane with a bunch of roses tied to its bonnet. He asked Dean how fast it could go, and he replied, 150 miles per hour. Guinness asked if he had driven it, and Dean replied that he hadn't. Guinness remembers that the sports car looked sinister, exhausted, hungry, and ill-tempered. Guinness remembers, quote, "Some strange thing came over me, some almost different voice, and I said, 'Look, I won't join your table unless you want me to, but I must say something. Please do not get into that car, because if you do, if you get into that car, by this time next week, you'll be dead.'" That was 1 week before the accident. Although Guinness warned Dean, he just laughed it off and did not listen. The men had a great dinner and both carried on. After his death, there were many rumors that James Dean was actually still alive. Some people believed that he had faked his death and was living a secret life, possibly because he was gay, so he wanted to be free from that. There was also other rumors that he was like so messed up from the crash that he was just like secretly living.
That's an interesting theory. Mm-hmm. Never thought about.
Lost his good looks.
Yeah.
He went on to be Deadpool. Like,
Rumors also began to spread that the Porsche 550 Spyder was cursed. So what happened to Dean's car after the crash? And was it really cursed? So you can go on the website and look at pictures, but the car was completely totaled. Really nothing should have been taken from it. It had no value, but George Barris allegedly purchased the mangled car for $2,500. In Barris's book, Cars of the Stars, which I would love to read because I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
He wrote that when the Porsche was being unloaded at the shop, it fell off the trailer and broke the legs of his mechanic.
Whoa.
So that's the first thing. Barris decided to sell off parts of the car. He sold the engine and a few other parts of the Porsche to Dr. Troy McHenry. McHenry decided to put the engine into his Lotus race car and give the transmission and suspension parts to a friend and fellow racer, William Eskrid, and he also used them in his race car. McHenry and Eskrid entered a race using the cars that had pieces of the little bastard. During the race, McHenry lost control of the vehicle and slammed into a tree.
Wow.
The impact killed him instantly.
Oh, wow.
Jeez.
Eskrid's wheels unexpectedly locked up during the race, causing the car to roll. He was seriously injured but survived. This is when the curse of the little bastard began to pick up as things kept happening to the people who had anything to do with any of the remaining parts of the car. Although no article said who it was, so I couldn't figure this out, but it's also rumored that someone purchased two of the car's tires and had them put on their vehicle. And both tires exploded at the same time while the car was being driven, which also caused a crash. They survived, but just another little creepy
Interesting.
Thing. The remaining parts of the Porsche were loaned to the LA chapter of the National Safety Council to promote highway safety and to show what can happen when you speed. From 1957 to 1959, the car was part of a car show tour and was shown all over the country. In 1959, the car was being stored in Fresno, California, when it mysteriously caught fire. Although the fire happened only where the car was, there was little damage to it, just some melted tires and some singed paint. It was also interesting that nothing else caught fire, including the other cars that it was being stored with.
That is weird.
Now, keep in mind, like, all this stuff, I read lots of articles. I think I have 12 sources or something, maybe even 15. The stories are a little different every time because all of this is like rumored-ish, except for the people that actually died. And that was like this person really did die. But
documented.
Some of it's just kind of like, On September 30th, 1959, the car was on display at Sacramento High School when it reportedly fell off of the display and broke the hip of a teenage boy who had just been standing there admiring the car, looking at the exhibit. The date was also significant because it was the fourth anniversary of Dean's passing.
Oh my gosh.
Wow, that's crazy.
Huh.
After the accident at Sacramento High School, the car was being moved to a different location for display when it fell off the trailer and killed George Barkus.
Jeez.
This thing needs to be in the basement of, the
Warrens.
The Warrens with Annabelle locked up for safety.
So I read two different stories about how it killed him. I read one that like he was just like trying to get the car on the trailer. It rolled off, killed him. I read another that he was involved in an accident. He was ejected from the truck because he was the truck driver hauling the car. So he was ejected from the truck and then the car fell off the trailer and landed on him and killed him.
Oh my God.
Shortly after the tragic death of George Barkus, it is rumored that the little bastard broke in half and fell onto the freeway when once again being transported. The blockage on the freeway by the little bastard caused a fatal crash to occur.
Oh my gosh.
By 1960, George Barkus, the owner of Little Bastard, had had enough of the curses and decided to retire the car. He had the Porsche put in a sealed boxcar in Miami and sent it to Los Angeles. But when the boxcar arrived, although it was still sealed, the little bastard was gone.
What?
Little Bastard went missing for 55 years.
Wow.
What?
Wow.
Even with $1 million reward being offered in 2005 for any information on where it was.
Jeez.
On September 30th, 2015, exactly 60 years after Dean's death, a man came forward claiming he knew where the little bastard was. He said that he witnessed his dad and some other men hide the car behind a fake wall inside a building in Washington, and he was just 6 years old when he witnessed this. The man did not immediately give the whereabouts of the car. Instead, he wanted to make sure that he was going to get part of the money being offered for any information. So it was rumored that the man that came forward was given a polygraph test and he passed that. He had also given some details about the vehicle that were true that only people that had been around the car would know. But I could not actually find any information if they've actually found the car that the witness was talking about. Like the article's end. Like there's nothing, like I Googled
I was going to say this guy's dead.
Yeah, like there's.
Curse is going to kill him.
I mean, and this was 2015. Wow. So, and I could not find any articles of like if he ever really did tell them where it was and if they've recovered it. I couldn't find anything. But according to automotivemap.com, the transaxle of the Porsche had been continuously sold and purchased by people, but it had been stored in a wooden crate for 30 years. The transaxle was sold to an anonymous person in 2020, but was purchased just this year at auction for $382,000.
Wow, crazy. Wow. Do you know who bought it?
I'll get there. At first, the highest bidder was anonymous, but it was later revealed that the transaxle was purchased by Zach Baggins, who is the host of Ghost Adventures on Travel Channel.
Zach Baggins.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've talked about him.
He does the shows we've talked. He did the one that with the
Demon House.
Demon took over our house and locked us in here.
That's the one. Yeah. He would buy it.
Yeah.
He would. Yeah. God.
Baggins claims that he plans to show off this part of the little bastard at his haunted museum in Las Vegas. Oh, so we could go see the transaxle. Interesting. I mean, yeah.
But we weren't too far off when we said it needed to be locked into.
Yeah. He does have like other haunted things in his museum, which I went to the website and tried to see if they had the car in there yet. And it didn't say anything, but I think he purchased it like this summer. So it's probably going to be a little bit before it's actually put into the museum. Although most of the stories of James Dean's cursed car are true, many believe that some of the stories were simply made up to gain more fame and attention for the owner, George Barkus, and to keep interest in the car. Some believe that the car was possessed by a spirit, and some even think that Dean had some involvement in the occult, which in turn caused him and the car to be cursed. But whether you believe if the little bastard was cursed or not, there are still a lot of strange occurrences that have happened that were related to the car, the crash, or to James Dean. On February 7th, 1968, a close friend of Dean and fellow co-star Nick Adams died in Beverly Hills from a drug overdose. He was just 36 years old. On February 12th, 1976, Sal Mineo, who was a co-star to Dean in both films Giant and Rebel Without a Cause, was stabbed to death in Hollywood at the age of 37. On July 22nd, 1981, Rolf Wolderich, who had been ejected from Dean's car during the crash of Little Bastard, died from a car crash at the age of 53. On November 29th, 1981, Natalie Wood drowned off the coast of Catalina Island in California. She was also a co-star in Rebel Without a Cause with Dean, and she was just 43 years old when she passed. So all people that were directly related
and good friends
had been involved
his.
With Dean passed very young. Route 466, where the crash occurred, is now California State Route 46. There is now a two-lane junction and a stretch of four-lane expressway that is known as Bloody Alley. It is near the site of the original crash, but not exactly where the crash happened, which they were saying, like, the crash happened just about 100 yards. Like, it was within the general area of this.
They've like, redone the highway since then, so that's why it's not exactly where...
They've redone it a couple of times, and they're actually about to redo it again.
Oh, really?
At the site, there is a sign marking the James Dean Memorial Junction. Bloody Alley got its name due to the massive amounts of accidents, head-on collisions, and deaths on that stretch of highway since the death of James Dean. So I couldn't find an exact number. There's different articles that said different things, but there are reported 20-plus deaths from accidents in this area since 1986.
Oh, wow. Just since 86?
Just since 86. Wow. So is this just a coincidence because of how dangerous that stretch of highway is, or could it be the curse?
Yeah.
Whether you believe in the curse or not, I think we can all agree that James Dean was super talented.
Yes.
And had he lived longer, we would have seen him star in many more films and have a wildly successful career. After all, he is the only actor that has ever been nominated for an Academy Award twice after passing. Fellow actor Martin Landau said, quote, Jimmy, James Dean, represented something that was happening in the States after the Second World War. Until that moment in time, grown-ups, adults, set the style for clothing, set the styles for music, set the styles for everything that was going on. Landau, like us all, believed that Dean was such a large part of a cultural legacy. So basically what he was saying was like he was paving the way for young people to be...
Yeah, he was like
stars
the head of
films.
The next generation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But James Dean's acting career is not over, even though he is no longer physically with us. The Hollywood film company Magic City Films announced in 2019 that they had obtained the rights from Dean's family to cast him as a secondary lead role in a film titled Finding Jack. And they were going to do this using special effects technology.
I don't like that.
That's creepy.
Who's Jack?
I'm going to tell you. According
out of all the questions,
I'm going to tell you. I know you keep asking me questions.
Dawson.
According to IMDb, the movie based on a novel of the same name by Gareth Crocker will tell the true story about the abandonment of thousands of canine units as surplus military equipment after the end of the Vietnam War. And the adventure that ensues when a smitten soldier refuses to leave his best friend behind, which sounds sad to me, so I don't want to watch it. Basically about a bunch of dogs that they just left in Vietnam.
No.
And that's what they that's picked to put James Dean.
Yeah, that's
yes.
No.
Sad dog movie. No.
I'm out.
That one's going to, you're going to have to go to that website. Does the dog die. Or whatever it is.
That's a website.
That's a website. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. No. So you know if you want to watch it or not. Yeah.
Anton Ernst, the film's producer, said that Dean's family is excited and thinks of Finding Jack as Dean's fourth film.
Hmm.
Quote, we searched high and low for the perfect character to portray the role of Rogan, which has some extreme complex character arcs, and after months of research, we decided on James Dean. Ernst says, quote, we feel very honored that his family supports us and will take every precaution to ensure that his legacy as one of the most epic film stars to date is kept firmly intact.
Who's his family? Who is alive still, you said?
It's probably his cousins. So when he lived with his aunt and uncle on the farm, he had a younger cousin who was like a little brother to him. So it's probably him mm-hmm. and his family.
Yeah, because he was an only child. Mm-hmm. Anton Ernst also said that the family views this as his fourth movie, a movie he never got to make, and that they do not intend to let his fans down. The film was supposed to be released on Veterans Day of last year, 2020, but COVID.
Oh, because James didn't want James Dean on set. They had to protect him.
Guess so.
Sure. Likely story.
So now they're planning to release it this year sometime around Veterans Day again in November.
I don't like it. I don't either. Veto it. I don't like it.
And there's been like no news about this movie. So yeah, that's probably not a good sign.
It's not a good
sign. It's not like when Carrie Fisher died and they put her in.
Well, she had already filmed things for it.
Well, there was the other movie, though, where they put her in near the end of that first one. It was like a prequel because mm-hmm. it was so it just happened. Her family obviously agreed to it. And it was like boom, boom, back to back. This is like 60 years out of the blue. This is just weird.
Yeah, it is weird.
It seems very random. Very random film to be in. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, he wasn't even alive.
It's almost like if they were going to remake the movie Giant and they wanted him to have like a cameo. Yeah, that
would make more sense to me. I would be like a little bit okay with it.
Yeah, Bethany, good point. He wasn't even alive when the Vietnam War was going on. It wasn't like, oh, he fought in it and this is like a special.
Yeah.
I just feel like you just should let people rest in peace and not mess with their creative legacy. I wouldn't want that to be done to me.
Yeah. So kind of going along with that, you guys saying like he didn't really have any there's no tie to this movie for him. One of the articles I was reading was talking about how they were taking images of Paul Walker and putting him into the new Fast and the Furious movies.
I didn't know that.
Yes. I think, I don't know, I didn't like read into it, but one of them, they like took parts from the past movies to input them of like him in a car in the new movie. Does that make sense? Like to where he didn't really have a part, but he was shown.
But it was actually filmed in the past.
It had been filmed in the past.
It just wasn't. It was like B-roll.
Right.
That's different.
They probably have a lot of footage they never used.
That seems acceptable.
Yeah, it does.
The whole and also that's a franchise he was in.
Right.
So you're like, okay, he was behind this project. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And it was like a memorialization towards him.
Yeah. And like an honor.
Is how it was like portrayed in the movie.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of was like in the Star Wars thing where you kind of feel, it felt like part of the movie was the emotion of this is her last part of being Star Wars.
It's like you're trying to honor that
heavy
person.
In a good way.
Yeah, this just seems very random.
Mark Roslier, head of CMG Worldwide, a licensing company that represents Dean's family, said that the new film technologies opens up a whole new opportunity for many of their clients who are no longer with us.
I don't like it.
It's exploitation.
Marilyn's next.
I do not support that.
You're going to change yourself
to the
production company.
I'm going to be free Marilyn. I'm going to be out there picketing.
You're going to change yourself to the crew.
Yeah. I mean,
no, I legit heard that they were like Amy Winehouse's dad was trying to do this as her as a hologram, put her on tour.
They've done that with Michael Jackson.
It's disgusting.
Tupac.
He's like one of the. I just think it's very exploitive.
One of the reasons she died. That cycle, right?
Yes.
Oh wait. Oh.
It's very gross. Yeah. I don't know.
That's awful.
Just let people have their legacy how they wanted it and how they live their life and then move forward, honor them in other ways. It's that's my opinion. I think it's gross.
But. Not to bring up Brady, but it's like, haven't we learned a lesson yet?
I mean, how much? Mm-hmm. It's just further exploitation. It's all about money.
Yeah.
It's not about bringing these people back. This is a money plot.
Yeah, it is. Well, and if the family really wanted to honor them or remember them or memorialize them, like, I don't know, do something different. This is kind of a little bit off topic, but, you know, I watched Keeping Up with the Kardashians. And this last season, it was Kim's birthday and her sisters had a hologram created of their dad. And he just said, like, happy birthday, Kim.
Whoa.
And, like, it was only shown. It was shown on the show, but it was shown for her close family and friends were the only ones there. And I'm like, okay, that's acceptable. I
should be
like, this is not.
No, yeah, I could get behind that because that's a personal thing. It's for your family.
Yeah.
It's a gift. It's like a family thing. It's not for money.
Right. Yeah. So,
I don't know. I just feel like they're just trying to bring every dollar they possibly can from any artist.
The firm has sold many of Dean's images all over the world. There is talk of a Broadway musical featuring James Dean in the works, and that they also plan to use virtual reality technology to create a James Dean, quote, digital human in a project about his life and legacy.
He would hate this.
Wait, I have a question, though. Is there going to be like virtual reality James Dean? Because I might be backing this up.
I mean, it's interesting, but James Dean would have hated this.
Well, listen to this. James Dean once said,
oh, he said, one day make me a virtual reality person. No.
Spend a night with James Dean. Take my money.
Okay. In 2021, I would like virtual reality.
Don't listen to what Bethany Young says.
He once said, immortality is the only true success. So Rosler states that, quote, what was considered rebellious in the 50s is very different than what is rebellious today. And we feel confident that he would support this modern day act of rebellion. Many people are excited about this new film, but a lot of people, especially celebrities, were not happy about the news.
And Wild Society podcast. Yeah,
yes. Many people believe it's puppeteering the dead, which was said by late Robin Williams' daughter, Zelda Williams.
Mm. Oh, wow.
And even Chris Evans chimed in, tweeting that there was a complete lack of understanding and that it was shameful.
I think this movie specifically or just in general? Yes. Wow.
I think it's gross.
That's America's ass we're talking about, too.
Captain America.
So that is the crazy, tragic, sad, weird, wild story of James Dean and his cursed Porsche 550 Spider, the little bastard.
That is definitely a wild story. Mm-hmm. I'm jealous that you did it and I didn't.
It turns out the little bastard was this film director.
Yeah.
Isn't little bastard like a character in Austin Powers? Fat bastard.
Fat bastard.
The opposite.
Fat little bastard.
Fat bastard.
That's funny. But yeah, so little bit of rumors, little bit of truth. Yeah. Maybe cursed, maybe not. But it's a sad world that we live in without James Dean. That's all I know. But 100%. Let's not bring him back in weird film form.
Well, now I want to see Giant. I've never seen.
Oh, it's so good. It's a long movie, but it's very good. Rock Hudson, hello, and Elizabeth Taylor.
They're all in that one?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yes.
In the words of Lindsay Lohan, you know, I'm tired of rumors starting.
Oh, my God.
Being followed.
From one Oscar-nominated actor to another.
Oscar hopeful dreamer.
You have to admit.
To MTV Music Movie Awards.
There was lots of weird things that did happen after his death. Like with
it's super weird.
With the area that the crash happened, like there was a lot of
people in his life dying in horrible ways.
Yeah. Forever young. James Dean.
Forever young. I wanna be forever young.
That was good.
Which is actually funny. I just brought up Lindsay Lohan because she has a connection with James Dean.
How?
She did a movie called The Canyons or The Canyon, and her co-star lead was James Dean, the straight male porn actor.
What is
so?
Wow.
You're welcome.
Oh.
And their acting skills have been compared.
Yes.
They're very similar.
I mean, both are talented.
You better watch out. James Dean might put a curse on you.
Ayo. I mean, Beelzebub's already here. Might as well just add another.
Do I get to see James Dean if he curses me?
Is he going to crawl in bed with you?
Like, oh, is he one of those spirits that tugs at your feet? Oh.
Tugs at your
crawls
feet.
Right up in bed next to you?
Oh, man.
Thanks for listening. Head over to our website, wildsocietypodcast.com, to see pictures from today's episode. You can also click on the shop tab of our website and check out our merch shop. Lots of goodies there. Be sure to follow or subscribe on whatever your favorite podcast listening app is and give us a 5-star review. It really helps us big time as we are growing. We love you guys and we will see you next week.
And let us know if you're here for virtual James Dean and his peen.
Pump your brakes.
Stay away from greyhounds.
Vroom, vroom.